Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Talking Rugby Union podcast, where today we have two very special guests that have joined us from nearby Crosby. We have England international Sarah Beckett.
And hello.
We also have Jersey Reds forward Charlie Beckett.
Non-England international Charlie Beckett. It's taken 13 seconds. I'm just here as Sarah Beckett's brother. Great. Carry on.
It's all right. I took 19 years to get not be Charlie Beckett's sister, so it's all right.
We've come full circle.
Yeah.
So we're going to just explain briefly what Talking Rugby Union is. Talking Rugby Union is an online free magazine that is available to everyone around the world. And we actually have featured interviews from both of these guys in recent months. Charlie was in January?
Yeah, turn of the year, I think it was, yeah.
Gosh, yeah, and Sarah was
just before the Grand Slam.
Yeah, it was, yeah, after the Italy game, yeah.
Perfect timing, really. Very good stuff there. So we decided to ask them into the office and talk all things rugby union. So we might as well begin. Who are each of our guests? We've got a little fact file set up, and at the end I'm going to ask to see if it's actually correct, because could go
fact
massively
fiction.
Wrong.
It's interesting.
Okay, Charlie Beckett, currently of Jersey Reds, who finished fourth in the championship this season.
We did.
63 points.
Yes.
Smashed it. And formerly of Leicester Tigers and Gloucester.
Yep.
There we go. And also represented England under-20s on numerous occasions.
Yes.
As long as other representative sides.
Yes, that's me.
There we go.
All correct.
And then we've also got Sarah, Furwood, Waterloo, back row in the Tyrrells Premier 15s.
Yep, that's correct.
18 when you made your debut.
Yep. Well done.
I don't know how I've done this. Sarah is one of 28 players to get a full-time professional contract from the RFU.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Another great one. And won a Grand Slam with England this year. There we go. The Six Nations.
Joe's done his job.
Yeah, it's well done.
I know.
That's the end. Well done, Joe.
Yeah, I know. Thank you
very much
for joining us.
We'll see you soon.
We're out.
There we go. So, but there's one more important thing. I'm joined in the room with three big Liverpool Football Club fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Chris, here's the microphone. And just chat about your woes or your delirium.
I don't think there's any woes at the moment. I don't know what you guys think. I'm over it, mate. It's all about Madrid.
You've got a massive bone to pick with Vincent Kompany still. When's he ever scored a goal like that? Ever. Ever. It's all right. We're in the Champions League. That's the one we really wanted.
Yeah.
What a season. Unbelievable. I know this isn't talking football.
No,
but
I've made sure we get the Liverpool segment.
If you'd offered me at the start of the season 97 points and losing one game all season, would have gone, yep, we'll take that.
I think, though, if you were offered that at the start of the season, you also wouldn't think we'd be coming second.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I saw, I think, like, as much as the draws against Everton and Leicester, for example, probably, they did cost us. I can't remember who it was. Someone said, we haven't lost the league on 97, just City have won it with 98, which I think is fair. But I think it's exciting. Like, you've got two of the best Premier League sides going head-to-head this season that there's been in the Premiership, and hopefully it'll carry on for the next few seasons.
Yeah, like you have to.
And United are rubbish. So
that's
there's always that. United are terrible, so that's always...
2-0 to Cardiff.
They lost to Cardiff at home,
literally finished sixth in the league. No one's talking about him.
Oh, he's at the wheel.
Manager.
You're crashing.
we're all looking forward to Madrid now.
Oh, my God. I'm on holiday with my girlfriend, and it's our last night. And I've said we're in Wales. And I said, last night we'll go and get a nice meal at a pub somewhere. Shall we? Oh, that'd be really nice. What do you think? I said, well, anywhere there's nice food, and they're gonna need BT
Sports.
Maybe sport.
A sports bar, maybe
she
in
went,
Wales.
She went, sorry. I said, well, it's 1st of June. She went, yep. I went, Champions League final. She's not a football fan. Not too impressed, but you can't miss the Champions League final.
It's the night before our Barbarians game, so I'm going to be sat in camp with my roommate, like, come on, mate, let's get Liverpool on.
No other Liverpool fans in the
no,
camp?
No, Packer. Molly Packer's a big Liverpool fan. Funnily enough, she's from Yeovil, I think, but
right.
Liverpool fan. So we sort of have a chat about it, but Langy, who's my roommate, no, he's not a big Liverpool fan.
I reckon you get in the team room, get it on the
big screen.
Get on the big screen,
yeah,
the team room.
Definitely.
And just don't invite anyone who's not a Liverpool fan, because I just laugh at you. Because if we lose to Spurs, if we this season, I'm not being funny, if we go through this season and get nothing, I might cry.
Do you
I might
what,
actually
it's not
cry.
Even getting nothing, it will be losing to Spurs.
Yeah, if we
it's
lost to Madrid again in the final like last year, or to Juventus, or even Ajax, if it was Ajax, I'd be like, fair, but Spurs, come on. Spurs.
Yeah, I know.
You can't lose to Spurs, can we?
I'll probably end up watching it with Zoe Harrison. She's a big football fan, supports Chelsea. But she said for the Champions League final, she'll support Liverpool. So
well, they've got the Europa League final in the week,
yeah,
haven't they?
Exactly,
I live in South Manchester, so if we don't win anything, I don't think I'm going to be coming out for months until the start of the new season.
No.
No, it'd be absolute heartbreak if we didn't win anything. And I managed, actually, when I spoke to Sarah before the Grand Slam, I managed to sneak in a little Sadio Mane reference.
Yeah,
so hopefully that continues.
Good. Hey, how good have you been?
Yeah, what a guy.
Yeah.
So seems hopefully
really
turns
nice.
On.
Our lads seem really nice.
Like, there's just like really
you know, like Pogba, you don't think you want to go for a beer with him. But
we might,
that's quite a sweet
we might not win the league, but we're really nice lads.
I reckon you'd have a great night with the Liverpool lads. Really, apart from Dejan Lovren, I won't go for a drink with Dejan.
Like Genie Wijnaldum.
What a smile.
He
lovely smile on Genie.
He's never upset.
No, apart from when Klopp didn't pick him. Yeah. And they came on and scored two.
Fair play though. So. Yeah. If that makes him score two every week, don't pick
just
him.
Just don't pick him. Also, I won't go for a beer with D Studgy D either. Daniel Sturridge, he seems like a bit of a...
I
think he's a bit...
I don't think he's... would be one of my mates.
Probably, I probably wouldn't refer to him as one of the lads either, if I'm honest.
One of the lads.
Which is a bit harsh, isn't it? Right, I could sit and talk for hours about
yeah,
probably should.
Should move on.
Actually, I'll hand over to Joe again. Well, Joe's a Newcastle fan, so...
Yeah. That's tough.
Just big...
Rafa,
do you know what? You tried to upset us, though, Joe, didn't you?
That when?
Second to last game.
Doesn't even know. Hang on.
Who was the only team to beat Man City in this part, in this calendar year?
Yeah, fair, you did alright there.
Okay.
Right, so... Now that's all quashed. So we alluded to it before. There's a Barbarians game taking place at Twickenham on the 2nd of June. I'm going as a fan.
Oh, lovely.
You guys are in camp next week because you've got quite a long summer, really.
Yeah, a long summer. We've got a big summer tour to San Diego after the Barbarians game, which we're really looking forward to. It's going to be a big test out there. 5 top teams in the world, so it's going to be a great experience for the girls. So, yeah, it'd be good. Barbarians game is fantastic to be able to play in Twickenham, first time we'll ever play the Barbarians as well, and especially before the men. So hopefully we'll get a big crowd in and there'll be a lot of support there.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a big day. I think there's a couple of county games on before and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously we talk about the San Diego trip. Obviously, yeah, it's great for women's rugby and all that kind of stuff. But you also got to go on holiday for San Diego for about 4 weeks. So there's worse things that could happen in the world.
Yeah, 100%. They could have.
Charlie's shaking his head. He's jealous.
I never got to go to San Diego like that.
They couldn't have put it at a much nicer place, to be fair. I think the conditions will be a bit brutal.
Oh,
but
it's going to be a bit hot.
Yeah, a bit hot. Oh. I mean, I'm melting when it's like 20 degrees over here. So God help me if I'm up there.
Also, on the Barbarians, like, most out of breath I've ever been was when I played against the Barbarians for Leicester, because there's just the ball's just in play all the time. Honestly, I played a half. I think the ball was in play for 26 minutes of the half. So you're gonna be so tired after the Barbarians game as well. They're the best fun to play in the Barbarians game because the maddest things happen.
Like,
I tackled someone who didn't have the ball because he's pretending he had the ball up his shirt at one point. And I was like, oh, it's all right, just play on.
They played against the USA. One of the girls did, like, you know, the backheel chip over your head.
Oh, I saw that.
It was Jasmine Joyce, wasn't it? Yeah,
unbelievable.
They only won that game very narrowly as well.
Did you watch the full game?
I've seen the highlights.
Great game. Great game of rugby. Just
rugby was ugly. The real winner that day.
Such a northern ball.
That's the first cliche reference of the podcast.
That's right. We'll probably have worse.
Other people.
But no, so that is kind of England's women's big summer, of course. Yes. But then the other thing that happened this year is that you, along with 27 of your other colleagues, have been given professional contracts.
Yeah.
How good's that for the women's game, considering that the Tyrrell's Premier 15's only just finished its second season?
Yeah. So I think it was like a 3-year project from the RFU come out and say there's no relegation or promotion or whatever for 3 years to try and consolidate the game. And I think coming through these years, the amount of talent we've picked up and being able to identify is definitely... and the standard that we've been at has definitely increased. It's been great for the game. And then obviously these contracts coming in, I think that's a massive investment from the RFU to see where we're going. I think the RFU are really striving to set the standard for the world. And I think they're doing a great job of trying to push the women's game forward and trying to get other people to sort of follow suit and give women's rugby a big investment.
And Charlie, what was your reaction when you heard your little sister was getting a professional contract?
Oh, so she... She rang me as I was going through airport security in Jersey.
I'm going through security, I can't really talk now.
I can't talk now. She goes, no, you're going to want to hear this. I was like, I'm literally about to go through the scanner. She's like, no, just listen. I was like, right, okay. So she told me, obviously, I couldn't be any proud if I tried. It's unbelievable. Like, to be one of 28 to get a professional contract when there's a lot of good female players. I've watched a lot of Tyrrell Premiers, obviously, over the last two seasons, and the standard from the first game I watched to the latest game I watched is improved massively. And the women who are playing are the unbelievable athletes. So to be one of 28 picked when she was 19 years old, kind of, as a big brother, it doesn't get much prouder than that, really. So, just unbelievably proud and pleased with her, because I've seen all the hard work Ess has put in and everything she's done to get there. And I think, probably surprised, definitely surprised me, but surprised herself at how quickly she's got to where she is. I had no doubt she'd be there in the next few years. No, no doubt about that at all, because I see how hard she works. I see the work she puts in. But to get there at 19 was unbelievable. And then in true Sarah Beck style, she's like, yeah, but at the 28, so I probably won't be in the squad. I won't do this, I won't do that. And then she's played every Six Nations game, big Grand Slam, started the last one. Like, I could wax lyrical all day about how proud I am of her and how excited I am to see the rest of her career and how it overshadows mine. But,
I was about to say, are you feeling okay?
Yeah, how it overshadows mine. I'm going to say nice things in public. I'll have a go at you at home. But no, it's unbelievable. I'm just really excited for the future of women's rugby as well. I think it's at a really exciting point of, as I said, England have set this down with these 28 full-time contracts for their 15s. Hopefully we see more and more professional female rugby players, because there's a lot of excellent female rugby players who train as professionals basically anyway, who aren't professionals at the moment, so they have to have their full-time job as well as doing basically a professional athlete's schedule. So hopefully we see more and more, and we just see the game rise in standard and competitiveness, but also the crowds get bigger and bigger. You look at some of the crowds here in the Six Nations. I was there at Twickenham. I unfortunately couldn't get to the games of the Six Nations, but you had 13,000 in there at Twickenham after you had a sold-out Sandy Park.
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
A sold-out Castle Park up in Doncaster. So all over the country, so that's south-east, south-west and the north, all there's a bigger and bigger appetite for women's rugby. And I think that it's just going to go from strength to strength. It's really exciting. I think you're almost at the perfect age to be coming through now. It's really exciting of you hopefully what happened. You're 20, you've got 10, 15 years, whatever, in a career. I think these next 10, 15 years are going to be really, really exciting for women's rugby.
And of course your family quite involved with Firwood and Waterloo.
Yes.
Your dad's the director of rugby for your team.
Yeah.
So has women's rugby always been a big part of your life? Because obviously I don't know what the scenario is, because I don't really know much about the club. So the women's team has surpassed the men's team in terms of its standing?
Yeah, so sort of like the men's team had sort of a glory years, didn't they?
When
my dad was playing.
In the mid-late 90s, that was
yeah playing, so yeah. They played a couple of seasons in the Premiership.
Oh, if you get dad, he'll tell you about when they beat Bath. Honestly, he'd be here for 4 hours.
Don't get in a conversation with him.
So the men, and then had a bit of a tough time turn of, I think when it went professional, I think
I think they just couldn't keep up.
They chased it a bit, I think, and got into a bit of money issues. But there's always been a women's section, hasn't there?
Yeah, so there was a women's section. So the likes of Jill Burns played there, and they were sort of in the Premiership. And then I'm not really sure what happened to it, but it sort of fell away. I think when they had like a group of people retire, it sort of fell away. And then people came back in and set it back up, and we were in the Championship for a long, long time. And then we ended up winning that. I think we won it like 5 seasons on the bounce or something until TP15s came in. And we were always losing that. So before TP15s came in, we had so the top of the Championship North, we played top of the Championship South. And then we'd either win or lose that one. And then you had to play the bottom of the Premiership to get in. And I think we lost to, I think it was Aylesford in the season before. It was a really tight game. I think they only lost in the last minute by like 2 points. So the girls were a bit heartbroken about that. But then Aylesford went to Quinns, and then TP15s happened. So we got into that, which was great. And ever since then, just been in the Premiership. So yeah, it's been a wild, wild ride for them, I think.
Yeah, and in terms of the TP15, Sarah, you know, you're looking at this England squad, and there's a lot of young girls in there, but now they have sort of a pathway to build on. That must be really encouraging as well, because we've been to the university finals, we've seen, you know, Langy's there, and we've seen Poppy Leach was playing for Exeter. So for those girls, they now have that clear pathway, which is the end goal, which is playing for England.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Like, our pathway growing up is now different to what it was. So I went through like County North, and then you go into like England talent development group, stuff like that, and that talent development group is still there, but now your pathway has changed, and it's through centres of excellence, through your TP15s club. So it's become a lot more involved within the structures that they've put in, and I think it's really helping to grow the game. Girls know what they're aiming for, so it's really helpful. And then, like you say, like university rugby is definitely getting bigger and a more important part of what women's rugby's trying to grow. I watched that Bucks final, absolutely unbelievable final.
Yeah, unbelievable. One of the best there's been for the last few years.
It was crazy.
I think you've seen that in the men's game as well. Rugby becoming more of a pathway. Like, obviously, a bit at Gloucester last year's Hartbury's right there, playing the Bucks Super League, and you see likes of Alex Donbrandt coming out of Bucks Super League into Harlequins, being one of their best players. See, I think now I came through the academy system, and that was the only pathway really when I came through at 16, 18 to get there. I think now there's 100% a viable alternative of, if you want to get a degree, play your book Super Rugby, go to one of the unis that's in the Super Rugby, and then come in at 21, 22. And I think it's really, really good that there's for men's rugby as well now, there's two pathways, but also it's happened in the women's game as well. There's a, I think growing up for you, it was probably at times tough to see how you got to the next stage, whereas for me with the academy it was always laid out. But now the fact that there's books for the girls
I think,
and
like,
for boys is great.
Books Rugby also provides people with another platform, so if they're a late developer, say, and they haven't been in the pathway the whole way through, it's great that they've got another chance to show, actually, I might not have been ready when I was 16, 18, but now I'm 22 and I'm more physically built and I'm ready to play at that level. And I think that's really good to have another opportunity to see other people who develop late.
And we were at Book 7 the other week and we spoke to Zoe Healy.
Yeah.
Smashed it. And she said to us that she'd never picked up a rugby ball before going to the Exeter University. So even using university as a way to find players that maybe didn't anticipate even playing rugby. It's kind
of I think that's definitely more for women's rugby than it is men's rugby. sorry. I think a lot of girls do go to university and sort of been playing netball or hockey, or rugby just hasn't been available to them. So I was really lucky to go to Range High School where Jill Burns taught. Holly Aitchison went to that school as well. She's a year above me in school. So we were good friends growing up.
You were an average girls rugby team, weren't you?
With
you two in it. Now, seven superstar and Six Nations winner. just playing a bit of girls rugby under 15s.
But I think we were really lucky to go to a school that actually had a rugby team, and we played rugby in PE, but a lot of schools don't have that and a lot of girls don't get access to rugby. And I think going to university, they maybe find, oh, there's rugby and girls play it and I've got a chance to play.
I think also there's, I think, our case in point is our sister.
Yeah,
so,
100%.
Sarah's twin Kate. So we couldn't have been more of a rugby family growing up if we tried. Dad played, our granddad was president of the club, Mum and Dad met for the rugby club. Grandma, honestly, couldn't have been more your stereotypical rugby family. And Kate Beckett would not play rugby.
I hate rugby.
I spend my life watching you two. Rugby's the worst.
Every Saturday, Sunday, I have to be here.
Ruins my weekends. You two are the worst. All this. It's wet, it's cold, I hate it. She was only happy if there was a good bacon boy or some chips.
Yeah.
And so she played for school, didn't she, once, because they had to, but had no interest. And then I think part of it, I think, is growing up for girls unfairly and wrongly, there's a stigma maybe around rugby of not the sport, it's not a girl's sport, which is ridiculous. But I think also, I think a lot of girls growing up, the contact side probably worries them a bit. And also, I think it's fair, like, if I get a black eye at 15, 16, you're allowed, you got a black eye. If a girl gets a black eye, it's probably, you don't wear it as well, if you know what I mean? Probably just, it's just, lad with a black eye, you don't turn eye, go, oh, they've got a black eye, what's happened there? So I think when girls get to uni, they probably, well, look at Kate. Kate went to uni and she was like, right, I need to find a sports team because that's how I get my social side. I find my friends. That'll be me. I remember speaking to her. She was like, I'm going to do rugby. I said, excuse me? I said, you're going to do what, Catherine? She goes, well, I went to hockey. I didn't really like it. I went to lacrosse. The girls didn't seem very nice. I said, right. She goes, I went to rugby. I didn't have any boots. Someone offered me the boots. I went, right. She goes, they seem really nice. I'm going to go with that.
The fact that she didn't have any boots, how many pairs of boots have we got lying around our house that she didn't have any boots?
So she goes, I don't know, I'll get into it, really. I'll play a bit of second team and I'll just do it for the social side. Well, she's now probably the most competitive player, the three of us. She absolutely loves it. She has, they have their varsity at Shrewsbury Uni of Leicester, their varsity at Welford Road. And honestly, I reckon potentially the most surreal moment of my life was going to Welford Road, where I've played loads of times for the academy and for Leicester. So they're going, I'm watching Kate Beckett play at Welford Road and being really so nervous about it. She's almost hyperventilating on the sideline about winning.
She was a substitute for the first time she played varsity. So first year, she was a fresher.
She started in second year. She needed us to say that.
She started in second year.
She'd be upset if you didn't say that.
Got back from injury, did a really good job.
Yeah.
So they were like, Kate, you're going on. And she started having like
a panic attack on the sideline. I'm almost that nervous. This is the girl who's 6 months earlier told me, I'll do it for the social side.
And like in the warm up, she was going around, like running past people, like high fiving everybody in the stand. And they go, Kate, you're going on. And she was, what?
So I think, so many girls go to uni, haven't played rugby. I think that's really important that they get a good standard at uni rugby, because if that's going to be their first 2 or 3 years playing, they need good coaching, good competition to. Hopefully, you go after 3 years, right, they actually are going to have to go to a Tyrrell Prem 15 and maybe push for England. So I think that's really exciting.
Yeah,
I think you'll get a lot of girls who haven't played up to they get to uni. So it's really good that's a pathway as well, not actually being looked at.
And we talk about Welford Road. Charlie, that's your first professional club?
Yep.
Leicester Tigers. Were you one of the ones that packed up at the age of 16 and moved down to Leicester, went to one of the colleges?
Yeah, I remember telling Mum I was off to Leicester at 16. She wasn't ready for that, was she? So obviously, I went Merchant Taylors. school in Crosby.
Ooh, imagine Taylor's.
Ooh. Posh school.
Posh school.
And was really fortunate that Tosh Askew, who was one of the academy coaches at Leicester, used to coach Dad, used to teach at school down the road from there, has contacts up here. And for a number of reasons, I've been in the Sale EPDG and stuff and been dropped, and Sale didn't fancy me at that point. So was just playing school rugby, playing school first team, and Tosh came to watch a few games, and then basically got a letter saying Leicester Tigers like to offer you a place in their academy. I was like, oh, that's cool. Well, I was more than that's cool. I was over.
Yeah, that's
I absolutely lost my mind. And moved down, packed me up at 16, didn't you?
Yeah.
Went and dropped me off. I moved in with a family in Leicester, house parents, lived down there. A couple called Bev and Mick, who are absolutely legends. Still speak to them both this day. Brilliant. Moved in with one of the lads in the academy, John Hargreaves, who's still my best mate to this day. We lived together. And was there, went, finished my A-levels at Queen Elizabeth College. So for 2 years, was doing three A-levels and full-time rugby. So we trained just as much, if not more at times, than the first team, because obviously a lot of development to do. It was the best 2 years of my life. But I look back and go, how the hell did I manage that? Like, you were up at six most mornings because gym was at seven.
But then I can remember you at home, obviously doing your GCSEs. Like, I can remember coming down to go to school and you'd been out for a run. I had to let you in the front door. You'd been out round the block.
How technical.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How far did you run round the block?
Yeah, but it's a big block.
I think what was different was obviously that was off my own back, and that was decided. Exactly. I wanted playing in 16s and I was too fat, so I needed to lose some weight. That was, and I was very much what I fancy doing. It was madness to go in and be like, you are here at this time wearing this, and if you're not, you get sent home. Because they had to say at Leicester, and I still live back today, to the annoyance of a lot of people, and late is late. So it doesn't matter how late you are, if you're 1 second late or 20 minutes late, you're late. And the rule was, if you turned up late, there was a massive clock on the gym wall, a big digital red clock, and if gym started at 7 and you turned up at 7:00, that was you gone home for the day, you were done. You don't get to train today. You go to college, you don't get to train. And it was a brutal environment. I wouldn't have a word said against the Leicester Academy. I absolutely loved my time there. There's a lot of stuff maybe I would have done differently to the way they did, but it's made me who I think a lot of what I did there has made me not just a player, but the person I am now as well. I think it installed a lot of work ethic and discipline in me that I probably wouldn't have had, maybe. Like, you'll probably know the difference in me seeing me.
Yeah, completely. Like,
like I say, there was a lot of negatives to it as well, stuff that I won't go into, but that you would have done differently and maybe would have been a slightly different player, maybe slightly better player in some ways if I'd gone elsewhere. But I had a hell of a time there, those first 2 years, especially when at 18, it was off you go out of your own house, and me and two of my best mates lived in our own house at 19. All we did was be professional players. I'm like, this is unbelievable. We're just a professional players at 18. So I grew up a lot. Moving away at 16 was a big thing. You were thrown at the deep end with 19-year-olds training every day. I remember my first day's training, we were playing retreat touch. And one of the lads thought I wasn't retreating quick enough, wasn't working hard enough, just volleyed me around the ankles. I just went flying. And that was how you learn.
Sniper.
In the academy at that point, that was how you learn. You learn that way, that if you didn't retreat quick enough again, it happened again. And very quickly, you started retreating quick enough. You were sprinting back. And it was just and that's what I mean, like, the work ethic was driven by the players. It came from above, but the players drove it in that academy themselves. And it was quite an experience, but brilliant. And like I say, I absolutely loved it. And we played a lot of rugby and had a hell of a lot of fun while we were there. It was great.
And now at Jersey Reds, we look at kind of your class, we'll call it your class at Leicester Tigers, Jake Farnworth, and there's a few other lads that are all now playing in the Championship as well.
Yeah.
It's quite an interesting, really, when you think about it, that a lot of lads that your contemporaries have ended up in the same league as you as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, boys I came to the academy with that I've played against this season, there's a lot of Nottingham, so Jake Farnworth, like you said, Will Owen, David Williams, they were all my age at the academy, either year or year above. And even on loan, Charlie Thacker's been on loan from Leicester this year. Owen Hills has been on loan. Last season, Paolo Adogwu was on loan at Rotherham from Sale. There's a lot of us, Jamie Jack, there's a lot of us. It's interesting, I think, in the past, probably, Leicester, I think it's different now under Geordie. He's given the boys more of a go, but I think they've probably, the way I look at it is they've been a bit slow at giving younger lads a chance sometimes, I think. And I think you probably start to see some of the issues with that, with what's happened with them now, and the fact that you've got an older core of Leicester players, and likes of the Youngs, Dan Cole, that lot. Obviously, Tom Croft just retired. Anthony Allen a few years ago, that lot. But actually, and then you've got your young lads, your 19, 20-year-olds, who Geordie's given a chance to now. But those middling years that are between about 22 and 26, you haven't really got any what you'd call core Leicester players. You've got a lot of players who they bring in and have, they'll be there for two seasons and leave again. Knowing the club quite well from when I was there, but looking from afar now, not knowing what's going on the inside, I think part of it is they've kind of lost who Leicester are. 5-10 years ago, you said, well, who are Leicester Tigers? You knew exactly who Leicester Tigers were and you knew what you were getting if you went to Welford Road. You probably don't now. And they're probably, you look at the signings they've made, you look at Charlie Clare and Callum Green, there's two ex-Leicester Tigers Academy boys going back. You've got Geordie, who's Leicester man through and through. I couldn't speak highly enough of Jordan Murphy, both as a person and a coach. I genuinely think he's the right man to sort them out. I love Geordie to bits. He's brilliant. I did a lot of, he was our A-League head coach when I was there. So I did a lot of work with Geordie because I've played a million games in the A-League.
A million.
A million and one, maybe. So I think you're seeing maybe the problem of that. So yeah, so I moved to Gloucester after 4 years at Leicester and yeah, rejoined up with Neil McCarthy, who's academy manager there, signed a senior academy contract there. I had a brilliant 2 years at Gloucester. We had, in my first season, we had a brilliant A-League run. We made it to the A-League final. And I was really lucky to be A-League captain for my 2 years there. And oh, that A-League final still haunts me to this day. Because honestly, at half-time, you were there, that day, weren't you? Yeah. Half-time.
I was there most Monday nights.
You were there most Monday nights at King's Home, wherever we were. I've never been more sure that I was going to win a game in my life. Honestly, we had all the possession. We were only 8-7 up. But it couldn't have been more our game.
Absolutely dominating.
And I said, at half-time, all that was said was, lads, these next 10 minutes are massive. Win this next 10 minutes or win the game. 16-0 to Northampton in the next 10 minutes. They went penalty in the first 5 minutes and then try. I was like, I've never felt momentum slip like in a game. But yeah, I had a really good 2 years at Gloucester. I was lucky I got to captain them in the LV Cup. Played a lot of A-League. Played the European Challenge Cup. Played a lot of rugby, was very well, played a lot of A-League rugby, played a bit of first rugby, was very happy there. But they made the decision that going forward into the season, they wanted to go with really world class areas. Look at the second rows they've got there now, yeah. Unbelievable. And they just, there wasn't the space for me, which was tough to take. But I spoke to Joe about it early in the season. I think, look, coming out of a Premiership environment now and looking at it and knowing what it takes to be in a match day squad every week, we're on the wider squad now. As much as I probably bemoan the fact that I maybe was a little bit unlucky, I never got a shot in the Premiership chance. I felt every level I played with, A-League, Anglo-Welsh, European Challenge Cup, I played well and was ready for the next step. I never got that Premiership chance. I actually need to look at myself and go, well, I was probably a little bit happy in training in the week. I was working hard, but just let the session pass me by a little bit. I was in the bibs. I did my job, now I got off the pitch, which I probably thought a bit naively playing well in the A-League would get me a chance, and that's not how it works. You've got to day in, day out, pitch up and show what you can do, and I probably wasn't doing that. So I probably learned that a bit late coming out of Premiership Club. Would have been better if I'd realised that when I was there, wouldn't it? So the plan is hopefully get signed out. I'm end of a contract to Jersey, get signed back to Premiership Club, hopefully. And I'll do it very differently. I'll know what I need to do and hopefully give a better representation of myself. But if I don't, I don't, and I have to live with that. But it's I had a great 2 years at Gloucester and I'm really pleased to see them doing so. I've got some really good mates there and I honestly think they could win it this year. I think Exeter and Sarries will both be desperate to finish top because I don't think Quins or Northampton will go to Exeter or Sarries and beat them. I just can't see that happening. But I think Gloucester could go to Sandy Park or the Allianz and turn either side over. I think if they do get to the final, I think I'd bet on Gloucester in a one-off game because some of the rugby they've been playing this year is absolutely scintillating. I just think in a one-off shootout game, I don't think there's a better team than them in England at the moment, the way they're playing and the form they're in. But it's a tough ask to go to Sarries. It looks like they'll go to Sarries. And you see Sarries in that Championship Cup final of the day. They know how to win knockout games as well. But I do think you're seeing the start of Gloucester being in that top four, top two, top three with Exeter and Sarries consistently now. Johan is a very good coach and more importantly seems to get the culture right there. He's very big on culture and a family feel. And that's probably what Gloucester's been lacking at times the last few seasons. So I think you're about to see the start of a very strong Gloucester for the next few seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to go back to something you said there, Charlie, you know, it seems like you've learned a lot from what you've experienced so far. From your point of view, Sarah, have you been able to learn from Charlie? You said there you've been going to King's Home on a Monday night to watch him. Did you learn a lot when you were trying to develop as a player and take the next step yourself?
Yeah, I think I always saw how hard he worked and actually he sort of showed me how hard he'd have to work to make it and I think that's where sort of my work ethic comes from, seeing actually how hard you have to work to be able to make that level and make that grade. And that's something when I'm playing, I'll always pride myself on, like, work ethic of just doing my job and getting back up, and I'm working hard to be there. I think it's different, isn't it, men's and women's rugby? I think sometimes you get a bit more of a chance in women's rugby just because the player pool's not as big. So your chance comes probably earlier and probably a bit quicker than in the men's game. But I think it's still the same, that you still have to be ready and you still have to be ready to take the opportunity. So I was very lucky to get my first England cap at 19. I've been playing well in the Premiership and had a good tour with the under-20s in Canada in the summer. So Richard Blaisley, funnily enough, he coached Charlie at Leicester in Leicester Academy. So yep. He's the England Blaise women's well. Forwards coach
did
as well.
Did a lot of A-League stuff for Blaise as well. We did a lot on a Tuesday morning at Leicester. We'd do an hour and a half of units, of course we would. And
we do a lot of units.
Blaise would take the shags. So we'd be over in the old white European kit is what we wore. And we'd have to go through whatever team we were playing that weekend. Like, I could give you the line outs of so many Premiership sides. I've done them all. So do that. And Blaise absolutely loved it. Would rev us up for Moors. We did about 30 live Moors. I'm not even exaggerating on a Tuesday morning. And you get you revved up and you get off knackered and you'd be absolutely shattered after. You'd be like, only back out on the pitch in 2 hours, lads. You'd be like, thanks, Richard. Yeah, cheers for that.
No, it hasn't changed. You'll be pleased to know.
I was so excited when S rang me and told me that Blaise was taking over as the England women's forwards coach, because he's another excellent coach and so passionate. He absolutely loves it, and I think what's really good with Blaise is he won't, and knowing him, he won't coach the girls any differently than he would the men. I think it's really important that you aren't more delicate or less honest because they're women, they're professional athletes, and you've told me as well he's pretty brutal in review.
Yeah, he is, and I think that's what you need in any team, isn't it? But
he's also such a good laugh.
Yeah, he's really
funny. Was driving in the drink after the Six Nations win. He was going around getting everybody absolutely hammered after the Grand Slam at Twickenham.
So we were
very professionally, I must say, very professionally. Yeah.
So yeah, he sort of rang me up and told me, oh, you'll be in a 35 man squad, and I was like, great, 20s, like I expected, well, not expected, but you know, when you've been in there and I was playing well, and I sort of thought, yeah, I'll be in 20s this season because I still qualify for under 20s. And he rang me up. It was funny. So I was at uni at the time.
How did that go, S?
Yeah, I dropped out of that.
How long?
10 weeks.
10 weeks she gave it. 10 weeks she managed at university before she came back home.
Cut your losses. It's not right for you.
I'll give up.
Yeah. So I was in a lecture when he rang me at first, so I had to put the phone down on him, which wasn't ideal.
Imagine getting called to be told you've been picked for England and going, nah, I'll put that to voicemail.
I was in a lecture too. I'll put that
to voicemail.
So he just said, ring me back. So I rang him back. He's like, yeah, you're going to be in 35-man squad. And I was like, great, under 20s, that's fine. He's like, no, like, EPS. And I was like, what? Like, are you okay? Is this happening? And I was sort of, have you ever been, like, in a situation where...
Pick for England now.
No.
thanks for reminding me, Sarah.
No, where your body just, like, shakes. Like, yeah, you can't quite believe.
Most times after I get off the watt bike.
Yeah,
shaking.
Me too. But
like, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was just like, oh my gosh. I was like, oh, okay, great, thanks. Put the phone down. I was like, Dad, guess what? So yeah, and then went to training camp. I had a bit of an unlucky run with an injury that I already had and got picked up in camp. So it was a bit of a race to try and get ready for the Autumn Internationals. And I was thinking, oh, I'm injured, haven't played, I'm not going to get picked for the Autumns. Again, it's a condensed squad. So it was a 28-player squad for the Autumns, and I was in the 35 wider squad. No, not capped, hadn't trained because I was injured. I was like, oh, I'm not going to make it. And then got the email, and I sort of looked down it and didn't really give it a second thought. And then looked there, saw my name, and I was like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, that was pretty special. And then went into training camp, and I was doing a bit of training, and... then we got the like team, so we get sent it on WhatsApp. It's quite brutal, actually. You get sent it on WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's mad how your team selection just comes through WhatsApp.
And if you're not in, you're not on the sheet. So it gets sent to like the 35-player, 35-player WhatsApp group. And then if you're not on the picture, you're either on the NPRs on the bottom or just not on it.
You're not getting people just leaving the group and they're not on the squad.
It's just the head coach deleting people from the group.
Imagine. So I looked at the bench and I wasn't on the bench, and I was like, oh, I'm not in the squad. And then looked at the NPRs and I wasn't on the NPRs. I was like, that is brutal. I haven't even made the NPRs. I haven't even made the bin juice. And then looked at the starting squad and I was starting and I was like...
So you talk about a race to get fit for that game. My race from Jersey to get to that game was the maddest few hours of my life. So obviously, I was really lucky. So obviously being in Jersey, I don't get back. Fair enough. I got to one of your Six Nations games. Yeah. It's tough to get back. But we were, so your game was at the Allianz on the Friday night against America, S's debut. And we were playing Ealing on the Sunday. So we were in London anyway. So I went to Harvey and I said, Can I do this? I'll train on Friday, because we just train the morning on the Friday. So normal Thursday for a Saturday game, Friday for a Sunday game. I'll train after lunch. Can I get a flight to London and I'll meet you on Saturday at a hotel, because they'll fly Saturday morning. He said, yeah, as long as you're with us on Saturday, absolutely fine. So I was like, right, fine. So I had a flight booked for whatever time it was, and it was going to be tight to get there for kickoff. And then a storm came in.
To not the island.
The conditions
not what you need.
That day were absolutely
I'm just
horrendous.
Sat in the waiting room, and they're going, okay, everyone, just move to this waiting room, please. And I was like, this is getting cancelled. I was like, this flight is getting cancelled. Anyway, we were last flight off the island before they started getting cancelled. So fair play to the pilot for taking us. And but we were half an hour delayed. So I get to Gatwick with my little bag, and I knocked over three people on the way through. I was sprinting through Gatwick. Just not
should've
screaming.
Got your GPS
just
on that,
screaming,
that
get out the way! My sister's making her England debut, I need to be there! Anyway, get through Gatwick. Miss my train by a minute. So I'm now waiting 10 minutes for a train. I'm trying to find a taxi 10 minutes. Anyway, eventually got to the Allianz after this taxi that I'd booked in advance. I had to wait for 10 minutes. I'm ringing him up. I'm like, please don't leave. He's like, well, you can be 10 minutes late. I was like, I'll give you an extra tenner. He was like, okay, fine. So I'm rinsed by the taxi driver. So I get to Allianz, I'm running through the car park to get there. And I've just missed kickoff the anthems, but I got there after 2 minutes. And I was like, so when I watched you make your 20s debut, I got a bit emotional in the anthem, because I know what singing the anthem meant for me when I played. I know exactly what she's going through. Got a bit emotional, but I was like, I've missed the anthem. I was like, I'll be fine. I won't cry. I'll be fine. So I've walked in Allianz, and literally right in front of me, she's made a tackle straight away and got up and didn't see, but has looked right at, well, looked through me, but has looked at me. I've just started crying like a baby. Just stood there, just crying. And then I've gone, get a grip of yourself. You've got to go and see all your family. So I've taken 5 minutes. I've been like, I've walked up and like, where are you, mum, dad? They've gone, oh, we're in this stand. They've saved your seats. I've got in. They've gone, you're right. I've gone, yeah, fine. They've gone, you just got here. I've gone, yeah, I just walked in. Been there 5 minutes, just crying already. But yeah, so that was a great evening, that one. Yeah,
I was going to say, you seem to go to great lengths to watch each other play. I didn't expect that sort of story, though, that knocking three people over an airport turn.
Yeah, there's probably someone out there going, it was him. That was him. Really waiting for waiting to sue me or something. But yeah, I wasn't missing it. That's like, S has followed me around the country and probably a lot of her childhood.
I sat one of my GCSEs early so I could get a flight to Italy for the World Cup final.
And I wasn't picked! Oh, no. So I wasn't picked!
The exam started at 9 o'clock. I was in doing my exam at 7 o'clock. It was like a 2-hour exam, so I was done at 9. Wasn't allowed to have my phone on in case I contacted like any of the other people that were doing the exam. Got on the flight to come down to message. Oh, I'm not picked.
Mum came out to Italy twice in the whole time we were out there for two games, and I wasn't picked for either of them. Of the five games of the World Cup, I got picked with two of them. And none of them, my mum was out there. Mum spending thousands of pounds to come and watch, didn't even see me play. I'd say sorry for that. But no, S has followed me around, and Kate, the whole family, we both could have a more supportive family if we tried. They've been unbelievable, and I probably ruined a lot of your childhood having to stand on muddy touchlines. So
it's all right.
When it came to her making a England debut, I wasn't going to miss that. Or when it came to Kate playing her versus varsity, if I can be there, if there's any way I can be there, I will be.
Yeah.
And it's just now we're really lucky that probably the three of us with Kate as well, just we're really good friends. So even if we weren't brother and sister, we just get on really well. So they've followed me, supporting me all over the place. If I can be there with them, I will. And that was one of the big decisions when I moved to Jersey. I obviously knew that was going to be limited, because last year from Gloucester, from Leicester, I'd get in my car, I'd drive every day to be. It didn't matter if I was getting back at 2 or 3 in the morning, I could just drive. Obviously, you don't get that luxury with I'm relying on flights and public transport. So that was a big part, and I don't struggle with it, but sometimes it's tough for me sometimes that I miss big family things being over in Jersey. But for my career, going to Jersey has been the right thing. The fact that I played, if you don't include A-League games, in the last 4 years, I've played 11 first-team games between Leicester and Gloucester in 4 seasons. I played 27 this year at Jersey. So I just need to play rugby. And when I spoke to Harvey on the phone before signing there, he was like, we run with a smaller squad. We'll have 4 second rows. If you're not backing yourself, you're one of the three in the squad, then we don't want you. And I was like, yeah, absolutely fine. And that's the thing, Jersey for how strange it is being on this little island. It's absolutely excellent, the fact that boys, if you go there with the right attitude, boys play rugby, and the kind of niche they've created for themselves, it's the place to go in the champ to come back to the Premiership. So you look at the players who come out recently, the likes of the two Jakes last year, the props, Armstrong and Woolmore. You see Brett Herring go into the Premiership this year. You see Nick Haining's gone there. Tom Pinkus have gone to Bristol. You see before that, the likes of Gary Graham going to Newcastle. Like, they've got a real proven track record to the Pro 14 as well, with Kieran Hardy, Jerry Sexton this year. Like, real proven track record of players. If you go there and play well, clubs are watching. So it made the right choice for me. It became the right choice for me for that reason. And hopefully this next season I play well enough that at the end of my contract someone does want to sign me. Time will tell. But you do have to make the sacrifice of, I don't get to
play like, things I'd want. I haven't got... Well, I've been to one game this season of yours, I think. Haven't I? The Ealing game.
Yeah, you can play Ealing game.
Which has been real tough because we play, like, you play on Saturday or I play on a Saturday or...
Oh, Saturday mornings now. Start with the text at 9:00.
Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, you too. Good luck. Every Saturday.
Yeah. And, but just, I, because he's obviously not on the mainland and it's a far away and you have to sort of fly there, I can't get over. I think the family's been over, haven't they? But I haven't been able to get over.
Because everyone but us. Shows where I am in the pecking order for Essie. And our grandma, actually, our grandma Mama, who's an absolute legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was able to come over for my birthday in the Irish game, which is unbelievable. She got ill, bless her.
Yeah, she
and
did.
She still apologised this day about not being there. It's like, Mama, it's fine. She's fine. Like, I'll be there next season. I was like, okay.
So when we played in Wales, so we've got two dogs. My mum's got two dogs. And usually, like, if somebody goes away, either grandma will look after the dogs or we've got, like, a daycare lady who looks after the dogs.
Paula. Big up Paula.
And she usually looks after the dogs, but Paula wasn't available to look after the dogs. And, oh my gosh, the absolute outrage that was going on in the family. Like, mum was like, I'm not going to be able to come to your game, Es, because somebody needs to look after the dogs. And I was like, Mama, it's fine. Like, don't worry. But she did miss my first try for England, so... I'm joking.
I was watching it on the telly. I had to book in the telly with our housemates. I need the telly at 2:00 on Saturday because England women are playing. They're like, well, what's in it for us? I was like, I'll make all the tea for the next week. They're like, deal. I was like, right, fine.
Yeah.
Little deals, isn't it?
I was like, first of all, lads, you should just be saying, watch your sister. There shouldn't need anything in it for you. But it's very much, it's my Sky Go account, Charlie. What's in it for me? I was like, I'll make you dinner tomorrow. Deal. There you go. We're sorted. I'll buy you next coffee. Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you cost me money, Sarah Beckett.
Sorry.
Because I remember you saying that you guys basically have to keep yourself entertained on Jersey.
Yeah.
So the one thing that was key, but might be changing, is the puzzles.
Yeah, so the puzzle fad's been and gone. We did our puzzles for a bit in winter, and then that kind of one puzzle was a bit too hard, and we've gone. We're done now. Puzzles are so last year. That's what we've decided in our house now. A lot of the boys play a lot of Fortnite. I'm useless on any game, so I don't. I've got so clumsy with my thumbs that I just don't do that. So you got a lot of boys do that. Like I said to you when we spoke, like, you go out for coffee and play a lot of cards, and the losers buy the coffee, so it pays to be good at cards. A lot of cheating.
Are you good at cards?
I wasn't. October was expensive month for me, but now I've got very good at cards.
Love that, well done.
But in summer, it's unbelievable because the beaches, it's like being on holiday all year. We finish up training, we go down the beach. Weekend, like, we did a full T20 cricket on the beach in summer. It's amazing.
Full T20.
We did a full T20. I mean, both teams got bowled out in about 8 overs, but we tried to do a T20.
I was going to say, he's definitely doing like full 20.
We tried to do a T20. It's unbelievable. And like I said to you, Joe, when we spoke last time, what's brilliant is I think a lot of clubs will talk about being a brotherhood and a family and et cetera, et cetera. But because at most clubs, boys at weekends will go back to family or they'll be around and about. We can't do that on Jersey, and in the week we can't do that. So we are each other's family. We literally are out there, each other's family. So a few lads just had babies with their wives. Like, you're there. Everyone's there. Look after the baby. You help each other out. No one locks their house in Jersey. So if there's any burglars listening, Jersey's the place to go. So you'll just be sat in your house, just watching telly, door open. If that happened over here, you'd be going absolutely mental. Someone's walking your house. If one of the lads, they'll come in, they'll make themselves a cup of tea and walk in and just sit in the lounge, and then they're there for an hour and then they leave. It's very much like communal houses. Everyone's house is everyone's house. And that's brilliant. And that I wouldn't trade for anything. This sense of brotherhood and family and the squad, and even wider the squad, the staff as well, a part of it. We're all just one big, weird family.
I think that's been a big part of the England women's squad as well. I think we've gelled so quickly as a squad. I think throughout the Six Nations, like, we're really new squad together. So obviously it was a big new squad at 35 in September, and then obviously 28 of us with contracts. And there's a lot of girls on I was on one cap when I got a contract. There's a lot of girls on like 2, 3, 4, 5 caps. So it's real new. But then also you got the older girls like Santa and Kate McLean on 100.
You calling her old?
No.
My having a poor
experience.
You calling your captain old?
Okay, I didn't say old. I said older.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, just clear that up. Sorry, Santa. Who are on 100 plus caps, and it's like a new group together. So I think we've really gelled really quickly, and I think that's a big thing that we've driven, that we need to be like good off the pitch as well as on the pitch. I think that off pitch really helps on pitch as well.
Does that sort of, since the contracts were announced, Sarah, does that sort of, not inclusiveness, but because you're always going to be in the same sort of squad, does that sort of help build that morale and team building, etc.?
Yeah,
because you're sort of the pioneers for the women's game, if you like.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about it like that. But we've been put in a really, we know we're really lucky, and we've been put in a really fortunate position to be able to be full-time rugby players. And I think we just want to run with that and see how good we can be. I think that's the big thing for us. We don't judge ourselves on winning. We judge ourselves on performance. So actually, if we win and it's not good performance, that's not good enough for us. It's performance and how well we're playing. And I think there's still a lot to come from us. And I think that's the best thing about this group, is that we've got some really young players and a lot of more experienced, as you'd like to put it, players.
That's better.
Thanks. More experienced players who have got so much to give to the younger players and are still playing at the top of their game as well. Katie Dillon McLean has been absolutely outstanding this season. Like, she's played so well, probably the form of her life, and she's still really enjoying rugby, and she's great to have around the squad. And think there's a blend of older and younger, and it's all meeting in the middle. And yeah, it's just great squad to be in at the moment.
And Charlie mentioned the lads at Jersey, they're playing cards. What do you guys get up to? Is it similar, or is it?
So there's a gamer group. I think that's Bots, Poppy, Abby Scott, Burner, and I think Santa tried to join that group but found she wasn't very good. So
that because she's old?
No, just because she's not very good.
You said it now, Charlie.
So you might have seen them in the Six Nations doing their like symbols. So I think Burner's a circle. One of them.
You've lost me.
On PlayStation or something. I don't know. There's a couple of us who have invested in a Nintendo Switch, which, yeah, it's good. You can play Mario Kart on that. Unbelievable.
How good's Mario Kart?
Yeah, so good. And there's new tracks on it as well.
I mean, we grew up playing a lot of Mario Kart on the Wii. A lot of Mario Kart on the Wii. A lot of Wii Sports.
Yeah, love tennis. Yeah. Yeah, good times. Yeah, there's some cards. It's generally just chilling out together. Yeah, Zoe Harrison and I bonded over having physio together. We had physio together a lot in the Six Nations, so we were in the room cracking jokes with the physios quite a lot. I think it's just a real good environment to be in. There's a lot of things that go on. I think a lot of the girls, there's been a bit of a pamper room as well, so girls have had like face masks on. I'm sure that happens in the men's squad as well.
I've never experienced that in a squad. No one's ever gone, well, to be fair, there might be a pamper squad.
You're,
I just don't think
no
one would have invited me. I think they'd probably look at me and go, he's a lost cause. No. There's no pampering is going to sort that face out, so we're not even going to try.
Face mask. I think Kel Smith was tinting girls' eyebrows. But then it's all about hair as well. So you have to.
Not an issue for me.
No, not an issue for you. You have
1-0 Charlie on that front.
You have to book your hair slot before the game. We had a really great girl who came. So when we went to Doncaster in the squad, none of our hair platters were in, so we were having a panic. We were
panic!
Like, what are we going to do about our hair?
I'd love to be in the coach's office selection meeting and them going, right, there's a 23, we're happy with that. And then one of them going, hang on, lads.
We haven't got a platter.
None of the hair platters are in. Right, we have to drop on the girls. When they ask why, we have to say, well, we needed player X in because they're a hair platter. Could you imagine being told that was the reason you weren't playing for England?
So yeah, we had a really great girl who came. She was actually, I think she's the captain of the team in Doncaster, and she was a hairdresser. So she came with a like trolley full of stuff. The girls loved it. And then she actually ended up following us round the Six Nations and coming everywhere with us and doing our hair before the game.
What a legend!
Yeah, I know. She was brilliant. So yeah, that was a good time. But I think Blaze didn't really get how important our hair was to us. So he'd schedule meetings and we'd be like, sorry, we can't come to that meeting, we're having our hair done.
Right, I can sympathise this. So I coached a women's side last year in Cheltenham Tigers, who play in the Championship South.
Big up Cheltenham Tigers.
Go the Tigers. And so I did it with Tom Hudson, who plays for Gloucester. We lived together last year, we coached together, trained together, spent all our lives together. And I remember So we're doing a first pre-season game. We sent the timings out before the game. So we'll meet at this time. Warp will start this time, blah, blah, blah. The captain texts me. I said, Charlie. I said, yes. He said, you haven't allowed any time for the hair to be done? I've gone, this is a joke. I've gone, you've gone, it's Charlie's first game. We'll wind him up here. We'll wind him up. They've gone, no. The girls need to do the hair. I was like, do not do it at home. And again, they're like, no, because only certain girls on the team can plait the hair. And
certain girls like their hair certain ways. So Jess Beachler playing a double Dutch plait.
I was like, if I had hair and I needed it done a certain way to play, I think I'd learn how to do it myself. They're like, well, the girls don't know how.
It's harder than you look.
So we need to do it at the club before the game. I was like, well, can't you just all get there before at the first meeting? They're like, no, you need to schedule this. I was like, right, can't quite believe I'm going to do this. I resent the timings and I had hair. A 20-minute slot for hair.
20
and
minutes?
Well, that's all I was giving them.
They're rapid.
That's all I was giving them. I was like, if anyone wants more than that, they have to get there early.
We have like and then every, a two-hour slot.
Every game like, of the season.
There's other things going on in that time. So like prep and prime is going on also, but you have to schedule the hair. So Jess Breach and I were in charge of scheduling hair. So you had to look when forwards were in prep and prime, when backs were in meetings. So you schedule people around it. It was actually quite a stressful
job. Every game of the season, I'm going, hair for 20 minutes. Going, I can't believe this.
No, different it's important. World. It's important.
Right, well, we're going to bring an end to the first part of this Beckett podcast.
It's two parts.
There's going to be two parts.
Oh, God, you might have to start telling stories in the second part.
Tune in to the next one.
If S tells a story, perfect bedtime listening because you will drift straight off.
You're welcome.
So I'm sure that we'll be heard by the many people that we listen to this podcast.
Millions.
The millions.
Yeah, I've heard it's on for big numbers.
Yeah, this one is. We've got the Beckett's in.